Good evening, everyone. Parshas Tazria, Tavshin Ayin Tes. Vayidaber Hashem El Moshe Lemar. Hashem spoke to Moshe, saying, page 608 from the beginning of the parsha, Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Aleph. Page 608. Vayidaber Hashem El Moshe Lemar. Hashem spoke to Moshe, saying, Daber El Bnei Yisrael, speak to the Jewish people, Lemar, saying, Isha ki tazriya v'yalda zachar, a woman that will conceive and give birth to a male, v'tamashe v'as yamim, she will be tamei for 7 days, k'me nidat v'ayis tatitma, she shall be impure like the days of her menstruation. Right, so here the Torah is telling us the laws of tuma that apply to a woman who gives birth. She has 1 week after giving birth like an ida, she has a period that even if she's bleeding, she's still tahar. After that period of time, she brings a carbon, and the amount of time for a girl is double. Now, the very first Rashi in the Parsha discusses the juxtaposition of the end of last week's Parsha with the beginning of this week's Parsha. Then the last week's Parsha was discussion about the kosher and non-kosher animals, and now we get into the laws of a woman who gives birth. What is the connection between the two? So the first Rashi reads, Amar Rav Samloi said, just as the creation of man follows every animal, beast, and bird in the creation of the world, so too his laws are explained after the laws of the animals. So the law of the birth of a child, the laws that involve the birth of a child, follow the laws of an animal, because animals are created before man, and therefore its laws precede the laws of man. Now, what does this mean exactly? Just what's the meaning behind it?
Most of the laws now, about humans anyway.
It's about the birth of human. It's about birth.
But kosher is not about birth.
True. That is true. So whether we're going to get an answer for that exact question, we'll have to see. But the point is that we have the laws of animal before the laws of the birth of man, coinciding with the order of creation. Just as animals are created before man, therefore the laws are there first. Okay? All right. What's the meaning behind that exactly? What's the meaning behind it being first, it being last? What's the point of that? Now, Rashi is actually citing a Medrash Rabbah, and I want to share with you what a part of the Medrash Rabbah that precedes this part. And again, it has to do with the order of creation, but Rav Samloi's statement actually is the end, is actually follows another statement that this deals with the order of creation. All right, so the Medrash says like this. It's going on a pasuk that says, Achar v'kedem tzartani, back and forward you created me. And it means like this, based on a pasuk based on a explanation of Belazar. Rabbi Lazar said, "Achar ze yom rishon, v'kedem ze yom acharon. Achar is the first day; kedem is the last day." Al dati Rabbi Lazar. This is following Rabbi Lazar's opinion. The chsiv that as is written, "Toytzi ha'aretz nefesh chaya lamina." The land should give forth living beasts to its kind. Nefesh chaya, the word nefesh chaya, which typically means animal, zuruchay shel Adam harishon. That's referring to the spirit of Adam harishon. Okay, which would mean Amar Ishlakish, Achaz Yema Acharin, V'Kedem Zayim Rishon. He also says that Achar behind means the last day. V'kedem means the first day. Aldait the Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish's opinion is, Tachsib, that which is written, Ruach Elohim Rachavetz al Pei Amoyim, the Spirit of God hovered over the face of the water, Zeruchai Shomelech HaMashiach. It's referring to the spirit of Mashiach. So, I'm not going to get into the exact explanation of each detail of this Medrash, but what the Medrash is saying is that certain psukim that we interpret in its simple form, in the Midrashic form, are actually referring to man. It's referring to the spirit of man, spirit of Melech HaMashiach, And these are happening on days that precede the actual creation of man. So there is a certain aspect of man that the Medrash is saying is already being created, is actually there before the actual physical creation of man. Okay, and therefore, im zacha adam, if a person merits, oimrim loi, we say to him, ato kidamta lochamai sebracious, you preceded everything in creation. The imlav, but if not, if you're not meritorious, if you're not being meritorious, oimrim loi yitush kadbach, you know what came before you? A mosquito was created before you. So there's a certain aspect of man that the Midrash points out preceded all the animals. Physically, he came after the animals. The meaning of that would be that if man fulfills what he's supposed to be, right, then he's first, because the spirit of man, the spirit of Mashiach, the ultimate of man, the goal of man, was already there before, was already created before. It was later that he got that the physical body was created. But the higher spiritual sense of man was already proceeding. So if you live up to that higher spiritual sense, then you are living up to the spirit that was created before, then you come before the animals. If you don't live up to that, then you're just an animal. If you're just an animal, then yidush kadamcha, then a mosquito came before you. Now the Medrash continues and then concludes, Amar Rav Samloi, said Rav Samloi, Kishem shitzirasa shel adam achra behem achayev oif, just as the formation of man was after the animals, kach toiras achra behem achayev oif, so too his law follows the law of animals, hadoh dechsiv, that is what we find written, zayis tarasa behema, first we have the laws of the animals, and then it says, v'achakach isha ki tazriya, and then afterwards, beginning of this week's parsha, a woman who conceives. So we've got, so Rav Samloi is basically continuing, or maybe in the Medrash, he's actually summing up this discussion by saying, the same way we have the man's creation after animal, so too the laws of man come after the animal. Now, it would seem to me that following the whole order of the Medrash, that if Rav Samloi is saying that we're following the order of the physical creation, so if Rav Samloi is working together with what was said before, it would come out that the order that we're dealing with is the order when man is not zacha, when the murdered man is not being meritorious. That's the order that we're following here.
The end.
Right. It's the part where we say to him, well, the animals came before you. Seems a little bit odd. Seems a little bit odd that I mean, here, there doesn't seem
nobody's
to be
doing wrong.
Yeah, seems like nobody's doing anything wrong over here. So therefore, why would we choose the order of when a person is not acting properly, if it's all going together? So I saw an explanation, and my understanding is like this. My explanation is that, you know, there is a Gemara in Sanhedrin, I believe, that talks about, has a discussion, why were animals created before man? Why was man created last? And there's a number of explanations given. One explanation that's given is that man was created last so that he comes to a set table, comes to a world, a ready world. And the point of that Medrash is, and the point of that Gemara is to say, which is a common idea that we find throughout, is that the world was created for man. It's created for man. Everything is a build-up to the climax of man. Everything is getting ready for man. That, understandably, is true if man lives up to his potential. If man lives up for the goal that he was created for, then the world was created for man. Which means the purpose, again, the purpose, that means man, we can say, precedes creation in the sense that he's the goal. He's the purpose. If he doesn't fulfill the purpose, if he doesn't live up to his purpose, then he's just another animal. The world wasn't created for him. He's just another animal. Well, in the animal order, he's last. So as Rav Samloi was saying is, Rav Samloi was adding a little bit, was adding another dimension to this idea. Where we say to man, if man is zacha, man is meritorious, we say to him, you preceded. And we say you preceded. And if he's not meritorious, we say you came last. Now Rav Samloi says, and that's the order we're following here. Rav Samloi is not saying we're only following that part of the order here. Because there's a way of looking at this order of animal before man, that may not be exactly the way the Medrash said it before, but it's a similar idea. animals precede man, it can be seen in two ways. It can be seen as the world was created for you, which is if you're meritorious, or you're last, because you're just another animal. That, Rav Samuel is saying, is what's being depicted here. It's not only coming, it's not talking about the law of man after animal, because man was created after animal, and that's when he's not meritorious. But Rav Samuel is saying, there's another way of looking at it. The way of looking at it is, like the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, that man was created, so that again, man is created afterwards. It can either be because the whole world was created for him, or it can be because he's last. And because of that order, which again can be seen either way, that's the order that we're following here also. So it's not necessarily that we're following the negative order that was mentioned in the beginning of the Medrash. Rather, Samuel is saying that man's creation afterwards can also be seen in a positive light, because that means the world was created for him. But that's only true if he is fulfilling his purpose.
Can you explain it like you're on that list? If you're going up, then you're on the top of that. If you're going down, then you're at the bottom of that.
You could look at that.
If you have a piece of gold, you're over that, it's your piece of gold. If you're
okay.
Under it, it crashes you.
Okay.
So that's what I think he's saying.
Okay. So therefore, but that could be what Rav Samuel is saying. Samuel is not necessarily, he's not actually arguing, but he's saying there's another way, he could be adding another dimension of how to look at it. Okay, but either way, the point of this order is to impress upon man that it's up to you which way you're going to be part of the order. Are you first because your spirit was created first? Or are you first because you're the goal? Or are you going to be last because you're just another animal? Okay, now let's move on. So let's take a look now at Pasuk Vav, verse 6, again on page 608. Uvimlois yimei tahara levena levas, and after the completion of the days of purity for a son or a daughter, meaning after the days that her bleeding period, where she bleeds and is pure, is complete, Tavi Kemes Ben Shanasa La'ila, she brings a year-old lamb for a burnt offering, Uven Yoina Oisar L'chatas, and a Ben Yoina Aratar L'chatas. How do they translate a Ben Yoina in this here? So a Ben Yoina is a young dove, and a tar is a turtle dove. Okay? It says, so you bring, the woman is supposed to bring a sheep, a lamb, and either a young dove or a turtle dove. Okay, and Pasuk Ches reads, if she can't afford the lamb, she brings two turtle doves or two young doves. Okay, now the Bala Turin points out that when we talk about these two birds, the tar or the ben yonah, these are, whenever the Torah talks about a bird offering, these are the birds it comes from, a tar or ben yonah. The Bala Turin points out, as we actually see in the Pasuk when she's only bringing birds, but this, he says, is the general order. The general order is the Torah always mentions the tar, we'll call it the turtle dove, before the bnei yonah. It is always typically mentioned first. The only time it's not that way is in this Pasuk. In this Pasuk, where it talked about that she brings an animal and one bird, here the Torah mentions the ben yaina oitar. Here it mentions the ben yaina, the young dove, before the turtle dove. Everywhere else, the turtle dove is mentioned before the young dove. Here, it's the young dove before the turtle dove. Why is that, says the Bala Turim. So the Bala Turim says that the first point is that the difference is that here, you're only bringing one. Typically, you're bringing two. Either each one of each, I believe, or in the other case, it's two of each. Okay, here, you're only bringing one or the other. Because you're bringing a keves, you're bringing an animal, and then you're going to bring a bird offering. But it's only going to be one. It's only going to be one or the other. Says the Bala Turim like this. Everywhere else the Torah puts the Turim, the turtle doves, before the young doves, except for here. Why? He only brings one. The point of the Torah is to say, if you find a Yoinah, if basically if you have the Yoinah, the young dove, lo yikachtar. Don't use a turtle dove. And if you got a choice here, if you have a choice here, use the Yoinah, use the young dove instead of the turtle dove. Why? Lefisha ben zugoy misabel alav. Because its partner mourns over it. Veinim is dabeg la'achar and never partners up with another one. When it comes to this turtle dove, a turtle dove, somehow or another we know, has this nature that it has a mate. If its mate is taken away, it will mourn that mate forever. It will not go to another animal, right? Other animals, you know, they mate with other animals. A tar finds its mate, and that is the one that it stays dedicated to. To the point that even after it dies, it's not going anywhere. And therefore, because that's not going to mate with any other bird. And therefore, so now, if you take them both together.
Well, but it doesn't say that they need to be a pair, it just says two.
But you in this case, it's only one.
I know, but in other cases, there are two, but it doesn't say it has to be a mate. And
well, it would mean to say this lesson would be that you should try to take this, you should do that. Right? This lesson would be you should try to do that. The point is that we're clear. The Rav is clearly saying that basically you should feel some mercy on it. That's the animal rights. You should feel mercy for it. Why go in and cause distress to this animal, right? If you don't need to. Right? We don't try to cause distress if we don't need to. And therefore, if you have a choice, look for the bird that's going to be suffering less.
Is this against the Mishnah?
Not necessarily. I'm not saying that's the whole reason for the mitzvah. This is like a detail. Okay. This is a detail that says, and you could say like this. The detail is clearly depicting that. And as many of the Mefarshim would say, there you can learn from that. Just don't necessarily say that's the whole point. That's the reason. But you can learn from that. So here also, you could say, the point is that the Torah doing this is trying again to teach us not to cause suffering, right? It's a chance for us to learn from here not to cause suffering. And that's an important lesson, whether it be to animals, whether it be to other people, right? We try our best never to cause suffering to someone. It almost comes out like even in the sense of a mitzvah. You know, if you can do a mitzvah in a way that doesn't cause some kind of discomfort for someone, do the mitzvah that way. But what's also interesting, and I don't have a lot to elaborate on this, but just that I saw that in the name of Simchas Yisrael Breidos Atzal, that what the Torah is also showing us from here is that there is a positive trait called loyalty. There's a trait here called loyalty. You know, because there's something more here than just not cheating. The idea is that you're so loyal, you never forget about them.
Yeah,
now that doesn't necessarily mean in real life that we're trying to learn from here that, you know, that if God forbid someone passes away, you got to mourn for the rest of your life. Yeah. That's not what it's saying.
So we don't require from people that trait, right?
No,
so
we're not requiring it from the animal.
That this is a good thing.
Right. Yeah. We're observing that there's such a thing called loyalty, right? We're observing that Torah is recognizing loyalty. Not to say that we have to necessarily follow that exact same pattern, but the Torah is recognizing loyalty, which means that you're not just going ahead and not cheating or not fooling the person. There's a trait called loyalty. You're loyal. You stick to them. You stick to the person who has their trust in you. You stick to them as strong as you can in all circumstances. Okay. Let's now move on. Perek Yugim Pasuk Aleph, the bottom line of the page. Vayidaber, again on page 608. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe v'Aaron lemar. And Moshe, Hashem said to Moshe and to Aaron, saying, Adam, a person, ki yeh ba'ar b'saray, that they will be in the skin of his flesh, se'esay sapachas b'heres, these three types of white spots, v'yah ba'ar b'saray l'negat tzaras, and it shall be in the skin of his flesh for an infliction of tzaras. Tzaras is a certain type of infliction of white spots on a person, and it could possibly cause a person to become tamei. Now the Torah says, this person with the spots is brought to Aaron the Kohen, or to one of his sons, the Kohanim. And the Kohen observes this affliction in the skin of his flesh. There's a hair in the nega, in this infliction, that turned white. The appearance of the infliction is deeper than the skin of his flesh. Nega tsaras, who? This is a plague of tsaras. The Kohen sees it and he proclaims it tamei. The Torah talks about, well, what if all these signs aren't there? What do you have to do? You close him up, you watch him, you see if anything develops. Okay? The Alshech, the Sefer HaPiryon, the author of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, wrote a commentary on Chumash. And in it, he brings down the Alshech that asks the question. The Torah, when it introduces us to this person, it calls him Adam. It doesn't say Ish, it says Adam. That's one of the words we use for man. But the Alshech was bothered that when you use the word Adam, Adam is typically referring to a person on a very high level. And, if so, it seems a little bit out of place that we use the word Adam for a person who's afflicted with tsaras, because typically he's afflicted with tsaras because he did something wrong. It's not, according to many commentaries, if not most, this is not a physical abnormality, a disease, a virus. The Gemara says it comes because of sins, which two things don't have to necessarily be exclusive of each other. But the Gemara says it comes because of sin. So it'd be very strange if we use the word Adam, which means a man on a high madre, on a high spiritual level, when seemingly what's being expressed here is that he's fallen from the spiritual he should be at. So why call him Adam? So says the Alshech that the Gemara tells us, why does a person get afflicted with tsaras? So one of the main causes is Lashon Hara. So the question is asked, we know that tsaras does not afflict non-Jews. A non-Jew cannot get tsaras. It won't be tsaras. So the question is, why, they don't speak Lashon Hara? They speak Lashon Hara too. So why don't they get tsaras? And the answer is, says that period. The Arab actually Alshech says that he says, Kisharu Mesa'ilam Eino Achtus Vashlemus Chiyuv Bahem, Veloshen Rav Amachlekes Eino Mazikalem Kolkach. Basically, the obligation of unity that we have Jews is much greater than that for non-Jews. By non-Jews, it doesn't affect, when they're not getting along so well, it's a problem, but it's not as damaging as for us. When it comes to a Jew whose our neshama is considered a chelak alekamimal, a piece of God from above, chatzivos b'makom echad, yun from one place. Basically, there's a concept that we're all one neshama. The Jewish people are, in its essential form in Shemaim, one big neshama. V'achiyav banu abba v'ashalan, and therefore, the obligation of us to be peaceful and to be unified is much greater. Hein le'inyan kiyama Torah, whether it be regarding fulfilling the Torah, hein le'inyan shar devar mekanei demeforsem, or whether regarding other things. If our essence is that we're one, then our oneness is essential for who we are. It's a much greater obligation. Okay? And therefore, we are saying, so why is it that we get strict when we speak Lashon Hara, non-Jews don't? The answer is because it's more damaging to us. Our sin of Lashon Hara is much more damaging because we are, in essence, one neshama. And as one neshama, if we're not being unified, we're not getting along with each other, it's a much bigger problem. You know, if you're one and you have a sick and you have something wrong within you, that's going to cause a lot of problems. If in this one neshama there are these ruptures, there are these breaks, that's much more damaging than when it comes to other people. And then, therefore, when a Jew speaks Lashon Hara, the effect comes out. It comes out in the white spots. Why is it coming in the white spots? Separate discussion. But that's how it comes out. the damage that we inflict upon the collective neshama of the Jewish people by speaking Lashon Hara manifests itself in the tzaras. And when and non-Jews who don't have that one collective neshama, the damage isn't as great and therefore doesn't reflect. And says the and the Alsha concludes that from here we see that these negayim, these plagues, these afflictions we're talking about are not natural. Because if they're natural, it should happen to everyone. If it doesn't happen to everyone, it's because even this physical malady, its source is spiritual.
What about the other two possible situations? When a Jew speaks Lashon Hara about a non-Jew, and a non-Jew speaks Lashon Hara about a Jew?
Well, we don't have... I mean, it's not a good trait to do, but there is no... When the Torah prohibits Lashon Hara, it's a prohibition from Jew to Jew. It's not a prohibition from Jew to non-Jew or the other way around. You know, it's not a good habit to speak. One can argue, especially based on what the Chafetz Chaim writes, you shouldn't speak Lashon Hara about anybody. But from a point of obligation, it's only from Jew to Jew. Okay? Says, now the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, the Alperion continues. There's a famous Gemara. The Gemara says, and I'll hear, to get an appreciation of this Gemara, let's turn to Parshas Chukas that we read last Shabbos in the Naf there, and take a look on page 840. Page 840, Pasek Yudalid. Zois Hatayra Adam Kemes Ba'ayel. This is the law of a man who dies in a tent. Whoever enters the tent, or anything that's in the tent, Yitma Shavas Yamin becomes impure for 7 days. If you're under the same roof, you're in the same tent, you're under the same roof with a dead body, even if you didn't touch it, you become Tamei. If something is inside, if it's not just a person, if an object is under the same roof as a dead body, that utensil becomes impure. The Gemara says that only Jews have a tumas oil. That's the Gemara says. Gemara says, oh, the tumas oil, the tum of an oil only applies to Jews, not to non-Jews. Why is that? Because what does the pasuk here say? It says, Adam ki yamas ba'oil. Adam, man who dies in a tent. And the Gemara says, Atam Kriyan Adam, you, the Jewish people are called Adam, and the other nations of the world are not called Adam. Now, if you translate that, it would be translated as the Gemara is saying, you are called man, and non-Jews aren't called man. That is cannon fodder. That could be used, that has the ability and probably was used by non-Jews throughout history. The Gemara is saying that Jews believe that non-Jews are subhuman. That's not what it means. Mefarshim explained that's not what it means. But rather what it means is like this. Adam, the word Adam, when you use the word Adam for man, the word Adam is very unique. Because we have other words for man. And there is a difference. The word changes between singular form and plural form. So for instance, ish is the singular form for, you want to talk about one man and you want to use the word ish, then the word for one man is ish, and for more than one man is anashim. The word changes, okay? Adam, if you want to use the word Adam to describe man, there is no plural form for the word Adam. It's not Adamim at the most. There's nowhere like that. You want to talk about people, you say Bnei Adam. But the word Adam, you could svar the im is there is a word svar the im. Svar the im is a word. Tari is a blend word. Svar deya, okay. But there, fine, but the word for a frog has a plural form. Yeah. Adam does not have a plural form. There is no plural form for that word. And therefore, the Gemara means is Adam Kriyam Adam means you Jewish people have the trait of Adam, that no matter how many of them you are, you are one. The word Adam is a word because it only has a singular form. It is a word that depicts unity. And you have that unity of Adam, others don't have that unity of Adam. That's how the Mefarshim explain it. So it's not saying that they're subhuman. They don't have that level of Adam, which is a level of essential unity, that you're really one neshama, one essence. That's what you have, Jewish people. Other people don't have that. Therefore, it says that period. You know why the Torah started with the word Adam? Why did the Torah use the word Adam here? Because it's trying to bring out the idea that you know why there is these afflictions of Tzaras that are coming out when you speak Lashon Hara? Because you're Adam. You're Adam. And because you're Adam, because you have this essential unity, the Lashon Hara is so damaging that it now manifests itself with these signs. But that's why the word Adam is here. The word Adam is here. The word Adam is here because it's trying to bring out the idea that the reason why these afflictions happen to you is because you're Adam. Your Lashon Hara is so damaging to your essential unity that it comes out with these afflictions. Okay. Now, let's take a look. Let's turn back to page 610. And this is 610 Pasek Gimel, which we actually read. We'll read it again. V'rakayina sanega bara basar. The Kohen will see the plague in the flesh of his in the skin of his flesh. V'seyar banega hafach lavan, and a white hair and the hair in the plague has turned white. Maranega amayk me'ar basaroi, and the appearance of the plague is deeper than the skin. Rashi is having an explanation what that means. Nega tzaras hu. This is a plague of tzaras. The kohen will see it. V'timei yisai and make a tamei. So the question here is that we have some extra words. The pasuk said v'ra'a kohen. The kohen is going to see it. Why does it have to again repeat v'ra'a kohen? The kohen will see it and make a tamei. It already said he's looking at it. So it should say, the kohen will see it, the signs will be there, v'timei yisai, and make a tamei. Finished.
And the following sentence is also redundant.
What do you mean?
Well, it says, if Sarah's affliction will be in a person, he should be brought to the kohen. We already discussed that.
No, it says he's brought to the kohen sees it.
Right.
Right. We're focusing on the fact that it says, sees twice. Okay. I understand your question, but let's just focus. I understand your point. Okay. But we're going to focus this on this pasuk, okay, where it says, V'ra'a HaKayin twice. So the commentary of Meshech Chachma says that the Torah is alluding to the following halacha. You know, a guy gets married, middle of Sheva Brachas, and he looks at his skin, and he's got a white spot. And he's got a hair there. He's got a problem here. Okay, now you can bring it to the kohen. The kohen's going to look at it. The kohen's going to say, Now, if the kohen says that he has tzaras, right? The honeymoon's over, right? He's going to be separated from his wife.
But even if he says watch it, he'll still be separated.
Excuse me.
There are two cases. One says it's for sure tzaras.
But either way, the case depicted here is for sure Tzaraz. That's at least this case here, okay? Well, we know it's closed up before also, but let's just talk about this case, right? The Pasuk is talking about making a tummy. So now, if this case were to happen to a chassan, right, it'd be a big problem. If it were to happen on Yantif, when he's supposed to come to Yerushalayim and be with people, with Simcha, right? It's going to be a big problem. The halacha is that the kohen, right, does not have to look at it in these situations. He doesn't have to look at it. Have to look. Just one second. Let me just make sure. One second.
So he has to bring.
1 second, please. A Okay, I'm just trying to see, is the pshat that he doesn't even look at it, or he could look at it, but not declare it? I'm not sure exactly. But the point is that under typical circumstances where we would say, look at it and judge it, there are circumstances where it's almost like, don't look at the plague, look at the person, evaluate the situation, and decide whether now's the time to do it or not. There are certain circumstances that we say, leave him alone. Don't do it now, do it later. Therefore, says the Meshech Chachma, that the point of the pasuk is, it says, Vroach Kayin, the Kayin will see it, because the Kayin really has to look, so to speak, twice. Or he has two things to look at. He goes ahead and he looks at the actual, he has to look at the actual plague. He has to look at the details and the conditions and what's there. And he has to look at this affliction, this white spot. Does it have the characteristics of tsaras or not? There's another thing. The kayin has to also look whether he should make him tameh. Whether he should make him tameh. Right? The pasuk says the kayin will see him and make him tameh. But the second ra'o is really alluding to the idea of look at him and decide whether you should be making him tameh. Because if he's the kind of person that should not be made tameh because he's a chassan or a tzantif, you don't do it. So it's a loot. So the Meshech Chachma is saying that the repetition of ra'ohu is bringing out is alluding to the idea that you have to look at the plague. You got to look at the person. So Rabbi Friend, in his book in the Sefer on the Parsha, says that we can use this as a, I guess, call it a analogy or a metaphor. That there are times here. What's happening here is that the kayin could, you know, even. You could see that there is some kind of affliction there, but kind of don't look at the affliction, look at the person. And you look at the person, and by looking at the person, you're not going to, so to speak, see the affliction. You're going to kind of look away at the affliction because of the person. So he says that this could be a metaphor for situations where we see a person who's clearly doing something wrong. But before we go ahead and judge it and decide this guy has an affliction, he has something wrong, he's doing something wrong, you have to kind of look at the you have to look at the person. You have to look at the person that you're dealing with. And before you basically declare him impure, declare him as wrong, as sinful, even though he's doing something wrong, you have to sometimes look at the person and not pass judgment on him. The story he tells is a story, I mentioned this before, that Reb Chaim Isaac Grzhensky of Vilna, he was the leading rabbi of Lithuania, so a person, there was a certain man who was looking for a rabbinic position, and he sent his son to speak for Reb Chaim Isaac. Reb Chaim Isaac should basically give a, you know, to give a letter of recommendation that the community go ahead and accept this man as the rav. And Reb Chaim Isaac knew this man, and he did not think that he was worthy of the position. It was not a position that he should be taking. So instead of telling that to his son, that this is not a job for your father, he said, I don't want to get involved in the issues of that community. Which means he wasn't giving him a letter of recommendation. So the son got a bit irate when Reb Chaim Isaac would not give him that recommendation. And he started getting hot under the collar. He started getting angry. He started screaming at Reb Chaim Isaac, insulting Reb Chaim Isaac. And Reb Chaim Isaac didn't respond, but at a certain point of time, he just kind of picked himself up and walked away. And finally, the guy left. So those who were present there were, besides shocked at the person's behavior, were wondering that, you know, for a Gadol Adar to be treated like that, a Gadol Adar has to tell the person to stop. He has to rebuke the person. He's showing terrible disrespect to Torah. It's not to be quiet about it. It's something to go ahead and protest. So why did he remain quiet? So Reb Chaim Reiser explained, they remained quiet because this person was not, he was being disrespectful, but that's not what it was about. It was about that he was upset for his father. It was clear that his father wanted this position, maybe even needed this position, and his reaction was really a reaction for the sake of his father. Was it essentially because, oh, I disagree with you and I'm going to let you have it for it? But he was hurting for his father. And at that point of time, to have said anything wouldn't have helped anyway. But the point was, Reb Chaim Meiser was looking, clearly the man's doing something wrong, he's being disrespectful, But instead of just judging the action that he was doing, he looked at the person. And he saw what kind of situation the person was in and judged him that and judged him according to that way. And there, and that, he, Rabbi Franz says, is what the lesson here may be. A person could have an affliction, he could have a plague, he could have something wrong. He may have done something wrong. But before you pass judgment on that wrong, on though it seems to be wrong, take a look at the person's situation before you pass judgment.
Well, your story consists of two parts.
Yeah.
The second part seems to be a good illustration of what we discussed, but the first part seems to be the opposite.
What do you mean?
Well,
first of all, what are the two parts?
Well, one is the part about him not wanting to write the letter, giving an excuse as to not wanting to involve, and the other one is not yelling at the same guy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So the person did something wrong, and the Torah says that he needs to be isolated, but it's for a reason. Maybe he's contaminating people around him. And for some reason, this rabbi finds situations that sometimes the punishment seems to be too severe, let's not pay attention. But in case of first half of your story, the rabbi thought that it's important to not allow
for the sake of the community.
Yeah, but I'm not sure. But again,
he's punishing the father. Punishing.
He is not allowing the father to go forward, right, because he is worried. Again, as he said, for the sake of community, it would have been a bad thing to do. And okay, here also, for the sake of community, why should we allow this person to marry?
If I tell you that the issue here is not, if we say this is not a physical malady,
yes, it's,
so then he's not going to hurt anybody.
Epidemic, yeah.
Well, but there must be a reason for isolation.
Okay, we'll talk about it. Talk about it. But if I tell you it's not because of contamination, it's not because of contamination. Does that answer the question?
No, because
why?
Well, if say it's for spiritual reason, this person should not be with the rest of the people. Why all of a sudden? Because it's some kind of holiday or some wedding, all of a sudden this gets forgotten. He should not be around people. He is contaminating them spiritually.
So again, let's say the issue is not let's see. I think this is the next thing we have to discuss anyway. Okay. Let's take a look now at page 616. Four lines from the bottom of the page. Kol yemei asher hanega ba yitma tamehu. All the days that the affliction is in him, he shall become tamei. He is tamei badad yeshev. He sits alone, mechutz lamachane moishavai. His place is outside of the camp. Isolated. Says Rashi. Okay, to explain what is the point of this isolation. Vadad Yeshiv. Shelo Yehu Shur Tameyam Yeshiv Imai. What does it mean? He sits alone? That means other people who are Tamei don't sit with him. It's not like, well, you know, he's Tamei, right? So why are we isolating him? Because he shouldn't make other people Tamei. But if other people would be Tamei, they could sit with him. He's not going to affect them. No. Even other people who are Tamei are not with him. He is absolutely alone. For Amar Rabbi Seinu, our sage just said, "Man nishtana mishar tameyim leishe badad." Why is he different than other impure people? Other impure people, we don't isolate them. We don't isolate them because they're tamei. So why are we isolating him? The answer is, "Hoyavu hivdo b'lashon hara ben ishlo ishto yu ben ishlo re'eyu." Meaning that through his lashon hara, he separated man and his wife and a man and his friend. Afhu yibado, he should also be separated. His being isolated is not because he's going to get anybody sick. It's not because he's going to get anybody tummy. Because if it was to prevent him from making other people tummy, he would do it to other people who are tummy. It's a punishment for him. He broke up people. He caused people to be separated. People that were together were now became isolated from each other. He's isolated.
And you would allow him to continue breaking up people during the holiday?
No, during the holiday, right? During the holiday, you have to keep in you have to probably keep in mind that there are other people who are going to be very affected also by him. If he's a chassan, then it's his kal is very affected. If it's the holiday, it's his family that's affected. So the question here is, there'll be a certain amount of time where we're going to go ahead and kind of push off this punishment, and give it to him later. Okay. Now he went ahead and he was like, now, so yeah, we're putting him in isolation. And it's interesting what you just said. We're not putting him in isolation because he's going to hurt other people, right? It's he already hurt people. This is his punishment. Or as the Mefarshim explained, the punishment is really a time for him to contemplate and to do tshuva, to think about what he did. He broke up other people's relationships. He made them isolated from each other. Now you feel what it's like to be isolated. And that should be your chance to be to contemplate and to think about what you did and to do tshuva. So Yaakov Kamenetsky in his Sefer points out that it's pretty clear from here that, so one second, how does he, let me just open this up and make sure I'm saying it right. Yeah. Right. If the issue here with this person, we're locking him up, is because he has a communicable disease, right? Then you're locking him up because, right, he's got to be locked up, right? Not because he caused other people to break up. He's got to be locked up. Now, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky points out like this. He says, you have to say Negoyim are not a physical disease and that we're locking them up because we don't want it to spread. Proof is that you do not become Tameh until a Kohen comes. If you have somebody who knows all the laws of Tum and Tara, as a matter of fact, there's a halacha that says, let's say the Kohen is an Amoritz, the Kohen doesn't know enough to decide, right? So Talmud Chacham could come and tell a Kohen, it is, and the Kohen has to say, okay, he's Tameh. You have to have a Kohen involved. Without the Kohen being involved, it doesn't make Tumah. Well, if we've got a disease here, what does it got to do with the Kohen? Why is it dependent on the Kohen? Then he talks about this example too. We know if it's a chassan, right, we're not going to look at him. What do you mean? He's got a communicable disease. Why are you not locking him up if that's the reason you're locking him up?
No, it's even worse.
Another point he says is like this. He says, it's really interesting that, you know, one of the conditions to declare somebody Tameh is this hair, right? If there's no hair, right, he's not Tameh. I think the halach is if it falls, like if it was there but then it fell out, it's also not Tameh. You have to have that hair there. So, you know what you can do? And nobody's looking, pull it out. And you won't become Tameh. So you know what the Torah just did here? The Torah put in this guy the chance for him to stay out of lockup. Yeah. Right? Instead of being in quarantine, it's all in his hands to be able to keep himself out of quarantine. If the reason we're quarantining him is because there's a disease here, it doesn't make sense. So therefore, Rabbi Yaakov says, it's not because of some kind of disease or communicable disease. But rather, the way he says it like this, but rather the whole point or the whole essence of the punishment of Negoyim, in Shamayim, they're revealing to him that he is excommunicated. It's like a prophecy. This is a message from God. And there's no other explanation for it. There's no physical explanation for it. And the way we fix this is by distancing him from people. And his isolation is going to bring him to tshuva. If he decides that he doesn't want to correct his way, it's up to him. It's for his own good that he should be isolated. Because he clearly has a problem when he's around people. And basically, why are we locking him up? It's for his own good. It's for his good. So basically, the way Rabbi Yaakov is phrasing it is that it's clear that Saras is not a physical issue. We're not locking him up so that it doesn't spread to other people. Rather, it's heaven's sign to this person that he deserves to be isolated. And why does he deserve to be isolated? Because when he is around people, he starts making problems by speaking Lashon Hara. And therefore, the fact that he should not be, again, it's for his own betterment, that he shouldn't keep damaging and hurting, then we lock him up. Now you could say it's a betterment for people too. But it seems like it seems like the main focus is him, right? You've made problems, and when you're around people, you make problems. You need to be separated, and you need to leave this opportunity to bring you to tshuva.
So what is your understanding of the halacha? Is it a punishment canceled or punishment delayed?
Delayed.
How is it delayed?
After the chasana, he's going to go to the kayin.
Okay. Unless he pulls it. Yeah.
Okay, that's his place. But Rabbi Engel's point is that, again, this is his opportunity to correct himself. And like any other time, that's up to you. It's up to you. It's always up to you to do tshuva. And that's another example here. The whole point here is tshuva. It's up to you. Yes, you're going to pull it out, and you're going to fool everyone, and you're not going to correct your ways. That happens.
Is it like the question when the Beit Din forces someone to return stolen $100? What's our primary purpose? To return the money to that guy, or to help this guy to do tshuva?
And
I'm not sure what the answer is, but I could.
I'd say the answer is both. Right. So the answer is both.
Right, but I think the primary motivation is. I think they can also turn it. Like it's really, we're trying to extract from this guy, make sure he returns what he stole.
And this is only for men?
No, men, women too.
Women too.
The problem is cut the hair. First.
Okay, can I?
Even yellow do wash on the right.
Can I finish the thought on the Chaim Ozer story?
Go ahead.
So the reason he's not telling, he's telling I don't want to get involved, he doesn't want the son to hear bad things about his father.